Welcome. It's Rob. I just put myself on mute and now I'm back.
Good morning, Rob.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. Good
morning. Morning, Sharon. Morning, Teresa. Morning, Mary. I think Ben and Tim.
We're here.
Welcome. I think it's 8:30, so in consideration of your time and how valuable you are and how busy you are, first I've got to apologize for last week. That was all me, and a big apology, and hopefully we'll develop enough deposits in the Bank of Trust to be able to forgive one debit.
Forgive.
It's absolutely
anyway.
Fine.
Won't happen again. Never happens, but it happened, so it must happen sometime. anyway, let's begin fresh and talk about the coaching experience as you've heard it, hopefully. After a couple of weeks, you kind of get the idea of what happens and how it goes. I think we have two good examples that we're using, hopefully you're using. Let me ask the question, what have you been able to listen to, and what have you garnered from that? And I'll let you guys answer in any particular order you want to.
So I got about two or three calls into Rudder before we switched over to Cunningham, and I am now, I think, three calls into Cunningham. So not caught up yet, but getting there.
Yeah.
Well, I think that. Yeah, go ahead.
So I did the same with Rudder, and now I'm only through the first two on Cunningham. I haven't done that third one yet.
And I've done the first call for Cunningham and the first call for Rudder.
Okay, great. So what well, let me just get some feedback from you. What did you think, and what do you, what's your impression?
So one of the observations that I took away that I really liked is I like how at the beginning you give them a chance just to say sort of what their agenda is or what's on their mind, because that, I think, clears the palate, so to speak, before you dive into the material. So I thought that was a nice analogy. I also think that the common thread with everybody is that they say they want to do this, and then when it gets to the conversation about, having to pare clients down a little bit and to call some of those relationships, it's really interesting that psychologically they all seem to have the same response. I thought that was interesting. And then I think I really liked the Mercedes example in particular, right? If you can't articulate what you're getting and why would someone with one, class of car have a different service than another, it really just doesn't work like that. I made some other observations, but I think those kinds of things, do they need a family doctor? Do they need a surgeon? I think just picking up some of those tidbits to be able to combat the objections that they give has been really helpful for me.
Great.
I thought it
good.
As I listened through them, I tried to take a lot of notes. And kind of like Mary was saying, you started out the Cunningham call by asking them what's on their mind. And then I thought, as I was listening through it, it was kind of interesting that it sounded like they had used you or Supernova as a coach previously, and it sounded like they used another coach somewhere along the line. And I wasn't exactly sure how you felt about them using you and another coach at the same time. But it sounded like they kind of drifted back to their old ways, where once they didn't have a coach, they went back to having a lot of clients and that sort of thing. But what I thought what I really liked what you did is you would ask them, you know, the question, what's on their mind? You came back and asked what's changed since you went coaching through the coaching process previously. And you just guided the conversation. And they were the one talking about it. They were the one asking each other if they had too many clients today. So you just facilitate a really good discussion where they're the ones answering it and answering the questions, really, that you're asking, but they're facilitating that conversation and getting to the answer themselves. So that was my takeaway.
It's good feedback. Tim, you've listened to a couple?
That was Tim.
That was Tim.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
all right, Ben?
Can't see it. Yes, I've listened to a few. I've been – it's interesting to see how much they talk amongst themselves and drive the conversation. No knock to you, Rob, but they really seem to take the ball and run. And they come to a lot of these conclusions themselves without you having actually given the answer, which is interesting to see. The part that has stood out to me, that cause we deal with this too, is they know the direction they got to take it, but they always seem to come back and say, well, Rob, what about this exception? And I think your answer is good in that you say, hey, it's your practice, you can do whatever you want. You're going to fail if you do that, but go ahead and do it. Leads to some awkward moments on the calls, but I think it's for their own good. I think we tend to be too appeasing in our partnering with teams and the stuff that we're doing, where we, you know, they'll break from the mold. We'll tell them, well, that's okay. It's your practice. We'll help you do what you want to do. You don't seem to take that approach, which I think we need to be better about.
Yeah, it's an interesting line you have to walk there. And I'm, you know, I'm fortunate in my position that I don't, you know, I can be there. Really their coach, not their friend, not their buddy. I don't need any business from them. I mean, you know, I do this for the right reasons. You know, I do it for money for my foundation. So it's not, I have no agenda, which makes it kind of unique because everybody has an agenda that they're talking to. Everybody, their boss, everybody wants more business from them. They need them. But Rob, he doesn't need any of that. And so I tell him the truth. And sometimes that's kind of shocking to them. But you'll see over time that it really builds a relationship and they trust me and they, you know, hopefully you'll see that they end up really listening to me. So it's kind of unique in that, and I think you can still do that, guys. I think you can do that. I think you have to tell them that, though. I think you have to be honest with them and say, look, you know, the reality is I could just appease you here and say, you know, something you'd like to hear. But in the coaching that we've observed and that we've done, here's the answer. You may not like it, but this is the answer. This is what this will get you what you want. This will not. So it's always your choice.
Yeah,
I
think I've had a bit of an epiphany in terms of this, and then some other things going on within my team. So and you've seen the stuff that we do. We're trying to do kind of some of this coaching. I've got one person who's currently very successful, and I don't know that's because she executes the most efficiently, but she also doesn't take any shit and just tells them the way it is and how it's got to be done. And, you know, it initially kind of takes you a step back, but I think it's what they need more than somebody holding their hand. And that's what I'm hearing on these calls too. So it's a bit eye-opening for me.
You know, I agree with you. It becomes enabling when you just sort of coddle them and let them go down the road they want to, which is really interesting. And I think you're dead on with that, Ben. Can I say one more thing? I also really like that. I think it was Tracy or Chris, I don't know who it was. One of them made comments about the fact that basically to have those clients in their book, they're not being paid enough for them and for the amount of work that they're doing. I think it was right after you had that analogy about, you know, I can go to the gym, I know what I'm supposed to do, but it's better for me to have a trainer because of the accountability. And she talked about that. And I thought at that point, having the data that we get from like Morgan Stanley, I don't really know what UBS has, and I know Merrill Lynch has more information than, you know, any other firm, I guess, but we don't do a lot with that data. But at the point that we could overlay the data that we use and the dashboard that we build, that would really help teams like that because they could see exactly who is paying them, who isn't, like all you know, pivot tabled up and on a really nice, pretty spreadsheet at the client level, so they could make better decisions, at least more easily, about who to pair out of the book and who might be causing them risk without reward.
No question. No question. Facts help. Facts help a lot. And having that right there in front of them is, you know, it's just irrefutable. This is the 80-20 rule. And,
right.
You know,
now,
you can – oh, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, because now their charge is to go back on their own and figure out who to pair out. And that becomes a really difficult thing. I mean, unless they know how to sort their own data and they're good at pulling stuff through their system. But I find most advisors aren't really good at that, or they would have done it themselves.
Right. So I end up, you'll see that we end up very dependent on them being truthful with us and them doing their homework. And, you know, some people do it better than others. There's a team that you might want to listen to, Michael Levin. It's a really good story. He was referred to me, maybe not Michael Levin. Anyways, the hard thing is that, you know, if I could get you to the right calls at the right time, I think you'll see some breakthroughs. And that's really what I was kind of searching for, is these mini breakthroughs, you know, the rudder wasn't particularly good example to start with. Anyway, I'll think as we go, you know, let's stick with what we're doing now. I think you'll get enough flavor, but every once in a while, it's nice to see, you know, at week three or four, all of a sudden there's this epiphany and they come around. And I'd love you to hear that because it's so fun for me. And it's, frankly, it's fun for them. And they're, you know, they practice the words and they get the words right. And then now they're all excited to go out and try it and tell their clients. And that part is, you know, that's the part that nobody else in their world typically can help them with. And they don't, you know, the management doesn't have time. Typical coaches don't go into that much detail. And so that's the part that, you know, the momentary epiphany when they gain control of their practice and they're saying no for the first time. It's wonderful. So they'll negotiate. In the calls you've heard, you hear them trying to negotiate with me. And that's fine. It's the way it always is. And I listen. You know, and then I always revert to that, you know, they'll come up with somebody that, you know, is the CEO, only has 200,000 with them, but he's CEO of a company. And I always use that phrase, you know, the rule of common sense always trumps all other rules. But unless they are meeting your minimums, just like the concierge physician. And I love that concierge physician analogy. If you go to a concierge physician, he has a price, and he won't let you do business with him unless you match that price. There's no negotiation. You know, he costs $5,000 and he'll take care of you for a year and he'll give you, you know, concierge service. But if you don't have $5,000, you're not getting in. It helps them to see what they're doing. And the other thing is this concept of it's really not fair to charge the client $5,000 if, in fact, the client doesn't have the money to support a $5,000 fee. He's much, or she is much better off going to someone else. And that's the industry compromises themselves constantly with this ABCD model. They just don't deal with the issue of too many clients. They just spread it out. It's kind of like pretending you're eating your food as a little kid and you spread it out on your plate, you know. And that's what they do. They simply spread out A, B, C, D, E, and it doesn't accomplish a thing except make for more work. But they think, Rob, it does something.
Rob, could you take that concierge analogy a step further and say, you can't join unless you have $5,000. It's not fair to someone who can't afford the $5,000, but it's also not fair to charge the $5,000 those that can afford it if you're not providing a differentiated level of service that you couldn't do unless you're following this model. I think that's the point they struggle to justify the additional cost, but if you're truly doing that Mercedes-Benz or Ritz-Carlton model, then you can justify this easily to your clients.
Yeah, you can. But the person shouldn't, you know, a person with $250,000 shouldn't be paying $5,000. So it should be a 1% fee, and if they can't afford that, you know, if they don't have $500,000 in this case with you and you're charging them 1%, you shouldn't, if they have $250,000, you shouldn't be charging them 2% to get this service. It's just not fair. Not the right thing to
do. So what I'm saying is the person has $10 million. Who can afford it, it isn't fair to them that you're even working with people with $250,000 and spending time that it should be spent on them.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell people the maximum number is not something that I determine. The maximum number of clients that you want to work with is determined by you and the number of hours you want to work. So if you want to do charity work, you want to do pro bono work where you're servicing people with $250,000, then you do that at night, nights and weekends. And then I just shut up right there and just let the silence sink in. And they go, I don't think I want to do that. So that helps them to see, look, this isn't an eleemosynary institute. We're here for profit. We give more than we give an extra level of service. And keep in mind that the idea of a person with $10 million or $20 million paying us more than our minimum is okay, because remember, 1242 is our minimum level of service. We can give more, and that more is justified for clients as we operate. You know, somebody has $20 million, $30 million with us. We almost operate like a family office group to them. We may meet four times a year with them in person. So the 1242 is the minimum. It's not the maximum of level of service. So we can up our service and customize it for each person depending on what they want. But we're never going to give less. And that never giving less establishes your brand. I mean, my dream was always to have a company where every single person was giving Supernova service. And then we could advertise it. Then we could market it. No one has ever had the courage to do that, or even the intelligence, I don't think, to do that. You could say, hey, every one of our offices has a supernova advisor in it, and if you're looking for great service, come to us, because this is what you're going to get. Multi-generational planning, full implementation of the planning process, through 12 scheduled appointments, 4 reviews, 2 of them in person, and rapid response to your problems, 1-hour response, 24-hour resolution. Come to us for that. And people will be told, wow, I'm sure not getting that now.
Hey, Rob, just a question for you. So you mentioned that a lot of the advisors, they might negotiate with you on minimums or how many people they can have. Have you ever done any research that after you've gone through the process with people, do they start to revert back to their old ways? Is there a percentage of them that start to do that? What happens when they're coaching in?
The fun thing is that I've gone back, of course, and coached other teams. I mean, the teams over again, because they call me and say, we need you again. That's what Cunningham did. They went through the process with Rob Schaefer and did the whole thing and then reverted and then called me and said, hey, we need you. They had hired, I think, Matt Oxley. And that's fine, by the way. My comment on that is great. You know, it's like, I know this sounds weird, but when I first met my wife, I was a Navy pilot down in Pax River, Maryland, and she was in Washington, D.C., and I had no money. Here I'm courting this girl that lives up in D.C. land with all the, with everything going on and, you know, lots of rich boyfriends around and stuff. And I used to tell her, I can only see you on the weekend, so go out and do all the fun things during the week, you know, go to the concerts. And when I come, we're only going to be able to, you know, do things that don't cost money. And that's kind of my attitude about this. Go hire as many coaches as you like. They're all good. They all provide some service for you, and they'll give you some good ideas. And that's what they did. And they learned some things, but what they realized that, you know, in reflecting is that they needed what we were providing and the things that they didn't do the first time through. So they rehired me, and you can see how committed they are this second time through. They're fabulous students. And it's not really fair to you guys to see a team like that, but I wanted you to see a successful team. And I'm not sure that I remembered that they had gone through when I talked about, I just was very excited that they were really doing well as a team. So I want to give you a team that's a little tougher to get through. And I'll find that. I just had one this week. Let me just go back to my calendar. Anyway.
And while you're looking at that, I'll make a comment. You know, the thing about having other coaches is that, like in Matt Oxley in particular, all these different coaches do different things. Like his is about growth through marketing and branding, and, you know, not quite, his segmentation is different. And, you know, for the most part, it's not the same focus as Supernova. And so it can be additive too.
That's right. I mean, it's very helpful. I mean, I've had people tell me, if I could only get you to do Supernova for every team, and then I coach them after that, it works tremendously for us. I don't compete with them. I know what they're good at and what we're good at. Bill Cates is a fabulous coach on introductions and referrals, and he and I work together. And I use his material, and he uses some of mine, and he says, hey, you know, if you will do Rob's program, you're perfectly set up to earn introductions. So it's a healthy thing for you, and it's a healthy thing for us. This Evans Tremont group, which is on Wednesdays at 3, and you guys can go, you know, they're so much fun. And they were referred to me by another team that's so much fun. They had so much fun going through, and they had a terrible time. They had a terrible time getting through because it was so hard for them because they're so nice. Anyway, this team is the same. They're really, really sweet people, and they only are doing this because of the other team encouraging them, and they're having a tough time, but they're so conscientious, and they're working so hard, and we have such good talk. But it's really counseling. You know, there's a lot of counseling going on about, you know, that are we doing the right thing? And and they're terrific. So anyway, they're a lot of fun. I love, there's certain teams that are just so much fun to coach. But the other part of the question is, what do they look like 2 years later? The average person 3 years doing Supernova has 70 clients.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. So, and they're doing it the right way. Their businesses have exploded. If you read the book, The Supernova Multiplier, there's many stories in there. Very helpful. The Ken Shapiro started with me he's with UBS. And he and Tom Lavaccari started as in private clients. They came from technology area. They were both entrepreneurs. They're in New York City. They had already started some acquisition strategies, mastermind groups, and had centers of influence, but they had never formalized it. They never created process around it. They went through the program right on schedule, really good students, really smart. As soon as I told them what to do with centers of influence, they immediately went out and did it. Within a month of our coaching, they weren't even finished. This was like a month into our coaching. They got introduced to us through a center of influence because of our process. And they got a $60 million opportunity, and they won it, and the story in the book tells about the fact that they handed them the folder, and the folder did it. The folder was different. Their service model was so different from the other five teams that had been presenting to them that they won the case. They went on to they have gone on to become move from private client to the private wealth management group of UBS, and bringing in $150 million a year in assets. So they're a phenomenal team. It's just they were ready, and they needed us, and we obviously, hopefully, had the answers for them, and they just jumped on it. So there's lots and lots of those stories in the book. You know, it's kind of 12 years, highlights of 12 years of coaching, but there's lots of people that have 70 clients now and are use the process religiously. So it's not like a few people do it. Lots of people take the course and a few people do it. I would say it's got about a 90% stick ratio. And if they don't stick 100% to it, they stick 90% to it. So we used to have people when we were we used to coach people in groups of three teams at a time for an hour without any videos, I would actually transcribe the notes from every call, record it and then transcribe the notes and send them out to them. So it's a different model, but I'd have teams drop out then. Not when we do it privately and they're paying for it, we never have a team drop out. They always finish. So it's pretty powerful in terms of its ability to convert. And I always tell managers and others that, you know, we're asking them to change more in 1 year than they've changed in the 30 years they've been in the business. It's pretty crazy. and they do it. So when we get a little backsliding here or there, don't be upset. I mean, it's pretty amazing that they're willing to do this and that they do it.
Hey, I apologize. It's 9 o'clock, and I'm walking into a meeting with Nugent in a second. So I apologize. I'll have to drop off. If you guys can just let me know what you talk about afterwards, that'd be great.
Hey, Mary.
Yeah.
Hi. This is Cindy Bowie. I wanted to find out. Rob has got a conflict on not next Thursday, but the week after at 9 o'clock. So he was wondering if you guys could do 8 o'clock.
Yeah, that's fine for me.
Does that work for everybody?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Great. Then we'll change the 12th to 8 o'clock.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks. All right. I'll talk to you guys later. Thanks again. Sorry. Bye.
Bye. So that's on the 11th at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, the 11th at eight.
That'd be 7 my time. That won't work for me. But I can just maybe I could talk to Ben and Mary afterwards and just get an update on what was talked about. I'm actually on a flight that morning. That's fine.
Oh, okay.
Anything else need to discuss today?
Let's just spend a minute on the structure of the first couple of weeks of the process. Are you comfortable with the ideas of the difference between an absolute minimum and a target minimum, and then absolute max and a target max? Do you get that and why that's important?
Yep. No problem there.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. Once we get through that, then we identify their ideal client. And then we transition from ideal client to ideal day, week, and month for them. So that's when they're doing their schedule. So they've got they know who they want as a client. Their target minimum, you know, it's $2.5 million. They like this particular kind of client the best, and they identify that. Then they come up with their ideal day, week, month, year. And we talk about scheduling them. And that's processing people together, that where you have to travel to California to see 5 people, let's batch, and they're all in Los Angeles, let's batch them together on the calendar so that when you go out there, they all know that they're going to see you on, you know, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, because that's their schedule on their 12-4-2s regularly. So you build your 12-4-2s around your visitation schedule. Okay, so that's kind of tricky and kind of important if, in fact, they're going to travel to see them, which they're required to do. You know, they either come to you or you go to them twice a year. And that works, by the way. Nobody tells anybody to do that in our industry. We do. And people say, why would you want to do that? It's so much work. I said, that's when you get your introductions. That's when you build your real relationship with them. And they see you, and they feel obligated. And at that point, the probabilities of getting an introduction go way up. Okay, So we gradually transition from who do we want, to how do we schedule them, and then we go through why it's important to have folders, how that works, and then with the 11 group this week, it was really interesting, how do you train clients? Because they've got a lot of clients that they've had for years that just do whatever they feel like doing, right? They call in whenever they feel like it. And that's a training issue. And I went through with them carefully. So if you want to listen to this past week, it was really pretty good. You don't have to listen to the the whole thing, but the beginning of it, middle part of it, is pretty powerful. Not the Levin group, the Evans-Tremont group. I think it made it, because there was a lot of me giving them the words to use in order to make it work for them. And then them giving me back the words that they were going to use in terms of segmenting their book. And they worked hard on it and did a good job. Cindy, that's the group that came from Cheryl and Jerry and are kind of struggling a little bit to the segmentation. But they're doing everything right. They've got three different teams they're going to be assigning to. They've interviewed them. So it's a very, very good, well, you know, a team that I wouldn't have bet would do as well as they're doing right now. I'm very impressed.
So, Rob, will you send us a link to that one then? I don't know that we have that. That's a different team than we're listening to right now, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think what we can, I mean, I hope we can do this is that we can, you know, you guys can have access to some of these recordings because I think they're really good.
Yeah, just let us know which ones. They're very helpful on our end.
Yeah, that would be, Cindy, that's, I don't know if you can send that to them and let them hear it. It's weak. This was
everyone, I apologize. I only have time for a half hour today. I have another call I have to jump to at 9. Are these typically going to be 30-minute calls?
It's fine. We can go as far as, you know, I booked an hour in order to protect the hour, but half an hour, you know, less is always better for all of us. So if we can, you know.
I apologize.
Yeah.
I'm going to cut you short.
My question before we get off here is, so the homework assignment for us, what should I have listened to before our call next week?
I think we start, this was, I think we should have gone through about 3 weeks of calls.
That's Cunningham?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I've been working on.
All right.
That's fine. Yeah, we'll keep it. We'll kind of keep it structured. Okay.
Okay. Perfect.
Good.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right, guys. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Yep. Bye.
Hey, Rob.